This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey, good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday to you here on Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester. We've got Max Power producing for us on KFH, taking your calls at 869-1240. You can leave your video comments to us on our video streams, which you'll find, of course, on 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X, all the different places. Glad to have those available to you. And then, of course, on the Odyssey app, there's a little microphone. You can leave us voice messages. We are excited to get things going today. Not excited particularly about the way the Royals are playing right now. We'll dig into that. We've got a couple of guests coming up. Our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, will join the program in the next hour, as well as Wichita Thunder general manager Joel Lamerno, who is getting ready as the Thunder get ready for the playoffs for the first time in a while. So we will get the latest there and look ahead. They will get some home playoff games in that series, but that should be a lot of fun as well. So we'll have that coming up for you in the next hour. KU lands a basketball player out of the portal. We'll get you the latest there and all kinds of good stuff. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Hey, happy Thursday. We've got, again, a lot to get to on the program today. And I know we're going to talk a lot of Royals, a lot of Major League Baseball here on the show today. But we can't forget the NFL draft is knocking on the door. We're on the doorstep of the NFL draft. So just around the corner as well, that I know we'll, I'm sure, spend some time on. Also, a lot to get to on the show today.
Yeah, I just heard the NFL update right before we came on, and, you know, Travis Hunter, and I'm surprised that he needs to come out so aggressively to playing both ways. Is there really an NFL team that wants to take him and not let him play both ways?
Well, I think a lot of teams are probably not wanting him to play both ways. They want to protect him. You know, they feel like, I think a lot of teams are probably thinking they're protecting him from himself a little bit, and also probably protecting their interest also with the amount of money they're probably going to pay him. Hey, that's like double the time that he's going to be on the field, double the chance of injury, all of that. So I can see a lot of teams wanting to take a conservative approach.
I think that's absurd. It's not apples to apples with Shohei Ohtani, but you've got a guy that is good enough to play both ways and has the conditioning and the ability to do it. Why wouldn't you do it? I don't, it's a part of the appeal of taking him so high. I don't understand it. I assume teams would rather him be a receiver, but if he can be both, like, why would you not want him to be both? Like, he can save you money if he's able to develop into a premier player both ways. I can't imagine the team that selects him says, okay, but now you don't get to do this other thing you're really good at that we know you want to do. Like, I cannot imagine that's going to happen. But it's interesting to see him come out this aggressively. I've just always thought of him as a two-way player. I've never thought of him as just a receiver or just a corner, ever. Look at some of the greats. Like, guys have done this forever. Most of the time, they've been premier corners that doubled over to receiver. You know, you go back to Prime and Dennis Green. What was the old Commander's corner? He would jump over to the offense occasionally. We've seen it over the years where these guys have been able to double up a little bit, but give him a shot. Let him try it. If he's not good enough to be, you know, one or the other, that's a different story, right? If he doesn't think he's good enough, or if the team doesn't think he's good enough, that's one thing. You're not protecting him from anything. That's a part of what he is.
I mean, I think that a lot of the time when you've had players that are playing, you know, on a couple of different phases of the game, you've got them either as an offensive or defensive player, and then they're doing special teams as well. They're a high level kick returner. That, you know, Deion, like when he was in college, for example, at Florida State, you know, he was a cornerback, but then he also was a punt returner and was great at both of those things. We see that quite a bit. I mean, that's pretty standard at not only the collegiate level, but the NFL as well. And you've got players that are high level receivers or they're high level defenders in the secondary, and then they can also go in and play special teams. I think teams are far more comfortable in allowing that sort of thing to happen than they would be having their, and I get it. Look, I think that it's also a little bit of a you know, contingency plan or safety net for some of these teams to think, okay, like if we're going to use potentially the number two overall pick or number three overall pick, we need to protect our investment and not let this guy on the field for every single basically snap of every single game playing on both sides. I think it does in their minds, you know, probably bumps their risk up a little bit in this guy getting hurt and their investment going down the drain. So I understand Travis Hunter's desire. I think there are going to be teams that are going to let him do it. He'll probably be okay. I think eventually he'll settle into probably one phase or the other, and it may take a couple of years to get there. But I understand teams being a little hesitant and not wanting him to do that.
Yeah, I don't, not while he's young. And the other thing is, like, are you that confident that you know what he'll be better at, right? I'd say while he's young and early in his career, let that man play. That's what he's always done. I use Shohei Ohtani as the comparison. It is comparable in the sense that sometimes I feel like teams have got to get out of their own way. You know, if a player is good enough to do it and it's not holding them back at the other spot, which with Travis Hunter, we've seen throughout his college career that it's not going to hold him back. And, you know, the thing that would hold him back is if he's good enough to do both in the NFL. But if he's good enough to do both in the NFL, what, like, you're investing, you're protecting an investment. You mentioned special teams. Guys more likely probably to get hurt as a return man than a cornerback. So just let him go.
By
let
the
him
way,
play if he's good enough.
I did a little bit of fact checking here. Coach Prime, Deion, when he was in the NFL, very rarely played wide receiver. There was one season with the Cowboys,
right,
in 1996,
the Cowboys did, but
that he did. He was a two-way player that one year, but he was like their fourth wide receiver. Didn't really get on the field doing that a whole lot. But other than that one year, he very rarely was a receiver.
Because he wasn't good enough to be a receiver solely, right? Like, that's the thing.
And he was, by the way, he was the first two-way player that one season in 96 since the 1960s. Like, this sort of thing is not common whatsoever.
Well, outside of like gimmicky stuff like Refrigerator Perry,
sure.
Troy Brown's probably the best example. Troy Brown played some meaningful snaps at corner for Bill Belichick. Belichick did it probably more than anybody. He did it with Vrabel. He had special teams guys obviously be such a big deal, but Troy Brown's a good example. Look, Travis Hunter can come play wide receiver, but if he can help you in nickel packages, I mean, does he need to be your starting shutdown corner? If he's good enough to do it, I would say yes. I don't know if he is or he isn't, but he can at least go into packages and help you defensively. I don't understand.
I mean, Troy Brown, like, he was primarily a receiver and very rarely played as a defender.
He would go in and help. But again, Troy Brown was also not nearly as good a prospect defensively or offensively, quite frankly, as Travis Hunter is. It's like, if he's good enough to do it, do it. If he's not good enough, that's fine. But if he is, why wouldn't you let him be helpful to your team in two different ways? I don't like protecting football players from injury. They're football players. Like, quarterback is one thing because they take hits to the blind side and they get free shots on everybody else. Like, it's football. Like, players are going to get hurt no matter how much you try to protect them. Anyway, I didn't anticipate starting that way, but it was in that NFL update. Maybe we'll get more into this. We certainly will before the draft. I don't know about today. When we come back, though, we'll talk Royals. Swept by the Yankees. Ugh. Frustrating. We'll hit it next.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrocht and Tommy Caster. We are glad to be with you here on KFH, the Kansas Fan Headquarters. Thanks to Brett Fry Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every day on the program here. Let's talk Royals, Tommy. Swept by the Yankees. Road woes continue. And again, you get late into a game. The Royals, the Royals doing well for themselves, tied up at three. This time it was the seventh inning. I looked yesterday. It was pretty crazy. It's like, how about, we keep saying the sixth inning has been bad. How bad has the sixth inning been? It's been real bad.
It's so been
going
really
into
bad.
Yesterday, I don't know if you saw this graphic I made and then tweeted out. Here's where the Royals stand in the sixth. Okay. From a pitching perspective, they are 29th in baseball with an 8 ERA in the sixth inning. Their whip in the sixth inning is 1.83. They walked 11 dudes in that inning. Those are both near the bottom of baseball, tied for, the worst, second to worst, I should say. Batting average against, teams are hitting almost 300 against them in that inning. It's not just that either. They're not scoring any runs in the sixth inning, 27th in baseball. Their sixth inning has been a disaster on all fronts. So we weren't wrong about that. Well, it was the seventh inning last night. But same, it was the same scenario. It was the seventh inning, though, and the Royals fall 4-3. Aaron Judge with the difference-making home run in the seventh. As Schreiber came out for you know, a second inning, basically, to face Aaron Judge for some reason. And then Daniel Lynch comes out and goes scoreless. It was good to see Zerpa get a clean inning. We've been kind of wanting that a little bit. But Tommy, Lucas Ursig is on this team and has not pitched since April 13th. And in that game, he has not pitched a full inning since April 10th. Since April 10th, the dude has given up two base runners in five innings. Why is he on this team if he is not going to help you when you need him the most? He's not tired. He's not overworked. Aaron Judge is up in a clean inning. And in the seventh inning, in an ideal world, this is the only time that you have to face Aaron Judge. Why is Ursig not in these spots? I don't understand it. It's infuriating.
I mean, the only thing that I can think of, you and I talked about this last night as the game was going on, is that Mac Cutrero clearly doesn't view Lucas Ursig as a Swiss Army knife type reliever that can come in different areas, in different situations, in different innings. To me, I'm not saying that I agree with Mac Cutrero, but to me, it sure seems like Cutrero wants to use Lucas Ursig in the eighth inning. In the eighth inning for him and Estevez in the ninth inning. That's, you know, I think a set role in a set inning for those guys, that seems to be the direction that Mac Cutrero at least is wanting to go. And I'm talking about those situations when the Royals have the lead. I think the big reason why we haven't seen Lucas Ursig in a week or, you know, a few days at least to pitch a full inning is because the Royals haven't had a lead in the eighth or ninth inning. And that's why we haven't seen him as of late. So I mean, that's the only thing that I can think of. One other thing that I will point out before you respond to that is that while, yes, I would have liked to see Ursig in that spot against Aaron Judge, if you want, I'm just trying to think of Matt Cotrero's mindset here. If you want to hold on to Ursig and Estevez, hopefully with a lead in the eighth or the ninth, or even a tie ball game in the eighth or the ninth, and Hunter Harvey's on the shelf, your next best option outside of Daniel Lynch is John Schreiber. So it's not like he threw Chris Stratton in there. It's not like he threw Sam Long out there. Zerpa didn't come in to face Aaron Judge. John Schreiber's been pretty good this year. He hasn't been the best in the bullpen, but he hasn't been a disaster like some of these other guys. So I would have liked to see Ursig, but there were far worse options to face Aaron Judge than John Schreiber.
Sure. And Aaron Judge, you're trying to go, you know, you're trying to go righty-righty there with Schreiber instead of Daniel Lynch. I get that. But the thing about all of this is, why don't they think Ursig is good in that spot? It's literally what he did for this team last year. Cutrero used Ursig all over the place. Wouldn't just make him a regular position closer. If he needed him earlier in a game, he did it all the time. Pitched multiple innings all the time. Came in and bailed dudes out all the time. Like, it's not like this is unprecedented. Ursig did it for this team last year. That's what I can't figure out.
They didn't have any other options, though. Like, there weren't, you know, Harvey was on the shelf. They didn't have Estevez. Daniel Lynch wasn't pitching from the bullpen. I'm just saying, like, it's kind of apples and oranges comparing the bullpen last year with Ursig as really the only guy that they had that could get things done in high leverage situations versus what they think they have this year.
Well, it's not working, and Harvey is on the shelf now. Look, I get it. Like, if the Royals get to the point in this season where they can extend it out and have some ability to sort of go like Lynch, Harvey, Ursig, Estevez, great. I hope that happens. That there, obviously, Royals fans know there is value in having that, right? They reached two World Series on that sort of bullpen philosophy. But the problem right now is you can't, they're not able to get it to that point, right? It's not, they're not consistently doing it, and they keep finding this spot in the middle of the game where they blow a lead or they can't get it to the 7-8-9 or 8-9 with the lead. That's been the problem. So right now, while you're trying to piece it together until Harvey comes back, when you're facing a situation where it's the whether it's the sixth inning and you got to have an out, or the game's going to get away from, especially the way the offense is struggling right now, or if last night you're in the seventh inning, that means in a perfect world, you would face all of their hitters one time. I know that's not, you know, that's, you're asking for a perfect world there, and that's okay. But at least with Judge up, go with another righty that's really good and can get him out.
Who's another righty that's really good in that scenario?
Who's
another righty that's really good in that?
Okay. Urszic, yeah. Now, you don't have to go to Lynch. Lynch is a lefty. I get that. But you like, I'm going strength on strength there. I hope that by the end of this season, they can assign innings to players. I've never fully believed in that philosophy. I've always been a use your best when you need them the most. But I absolutely understand and am on board with set roles in a bullpen. The Yankees dynasty was built on it. When the Rangers in the early 2010s went to two World Series, they were built on it. The Royals went to two World Series. I get it, and I understand psychologically why that's a good way to go. The problem for the Royals is they don't have all their horses to do that right now. And so especially when you're reeling like this, like you're reeling, like you need a little boost.
Here's the elephant in the room as well. At the end of the day, I would feel a whole hell of a lot more comfortable with the situation that the Royals found themselves in last night if there was any shred of hope that the offense could get them back into the game. You know, because like a solo home run in the seventh inning from Aaron Judge off John Schreiber, like that's not ideal. Absolutely, it's not. But it's a one-run deficit. And to your point, you said it earlier, Daniel Lynch came in and pitched a scoreless inning, and Zerpa did the same thing. So the other relievers kept them in the ballgame. It wasn't like the Yankees blew it wide open. But you and I, again, were talking last night, and I'm like, man, to me, it's like I don't have a whole lot of confidence or optimism right now that the offense can even come back one run down, much less two, three, four runs down. You know, so like that's another elephant in the room for sure. I would have a whole lot less issue with the bullpen usage and the way that Matt Quatrero is deploying these arms in the bullpen. And I honestly wouldn't have been like, I wouldn't be upset with them holding Urszic and not throwing him in that scenario if I felt like, okay, no big deal. Like the Royals offense is, you know, coming, they've got three more chances or two more chances, whatever it is, to get back into the game offensively. The offense has not shown that they can do that. They can't drive in runs. Now, it was a little bit better earlier in the game, right? Like they were able to get some runs across early, but we've not seen a whole lot of success with Kansas City down and coming back offensively late in a game so far this season. That's the elephant in the room as well.
Sure.
Where it'd be different if we felt like there was some, you could put the monkey on the back of the offense to get you back into a game. That's not the way that they're hitting right now.
100% agree. When things are ideal, the Royals can do that. They're not ideal right now. And they should have had more offense early in the game too. They keep letting these teams off the hook when they have their backs up. They had Clark Schmidt up against the wall and they let him off the hook in the first inning last night. And so, yeah, I agree with you. In a perfect world, that's great. They're not in a perfect world right now. You have to be adaptable. I hate using this word. I can guarantee you the last two nights, if those two situations were the exact same, the bullpen would not be handled that way. It wouldn't be. Like, there's no chance you're not throwing somebody like Urszic against Judge in that situation in a postseason game. There's no chance, based on what we've seen, Zerpa comes in with the bases loaded in the sixth on Tuesday night. No chance. So don't do it now. Like, don't let this, this is a tough stretch of games. We know that. It's not like, they're close enough to 500 here through the schedule that they've played that everything is fine. You just, but that same schedule can get away from you real quick. And so you got four games coming up here against Detroit. Treat them like playoff games, right? Like they need to, it's early in the year, but you got to have some wins here. You've got to salvage this road trip. You got to at least split this series. So go out there and treat him that way. let the offense eat. Hopefully they loosen up a little bit. I don't know what the ultimate answer is offensively. I really don't, other than it's a streaky team again this year, and at some point they're going to explode for a ton of runs over a week or two. We'll be like, oh, okay, the offense is great. We're probably going to ride this offensive roller coaster all year again without, you know, with the exception of making a trade and bringing in another bat somewhere in the corner outfield. Like, that's probably just the way it's going to be this year, but they have to be able to mitigate this. And if that's the case, they cannot let these games get away from them when they do get a little offense and establish an early lead. They just can't. And that's too much pressure to put on the pitchers, starters, bullpen. It's unfair, but it is what it is. If you have a chance to win a game late, you got to do everything you can to get that done. And throwing some of these dudes out there, Tommy Ursic has not pitched meaningful baseball since the 10th. We're talking a full week. Your best pitcher, arguably, has not pitched in a week. That does not make any sense.
They haven't had situations where
I think they've had two.
Well, what I'm saying the situations that you would think Matt Quatrero wants to put Lucas Ursic in,
right,
with the lead to hold the lead, yeah, in the eighth inning. They've not been in that situation since Sunday. You know, it was the finale against the Guardians. They haven't been in those situations before then or after then. Expectation wise, I said going into this road trip, this 10 game stretch, that you, when you're on the road, if you can split, if you can go 500, then you feel like that's a win. They got a lot of work to do to get to that point. It's not out of the woods, but they got to sweep Detroit in Detroit. And I think that's unlikely for them to do. So you have to salvage this road trip as best as you can. The only silver lining, the only light at the end of the tunnel for the Royals is that once you get through this stretch, you get back home against the Rockies. The Rockies are not very good, you know, so you can reset a little bit. Then you've got Houston coming in, and, you know, then you're back on the road again. So it's another short homestand for Kansas City before you're right back on another road trip. I think one of the things to keep in perspective, you remember last year, when the Royals were able to get out to that hot start, and you're like, okay, like, this team might be for real. They're winning games and they're contending in the division and all of that early on in the season. They played a lot of games against the White Sox early on in the season last year. The White Sox are the worst team in baseball. They were last year. They are this year. They have not played the White Sox yet. They don't play the White Sox until, what, the second weekend of May is the first time they actually play the White Sox. So you've got winnable games coming up. It's a really, really tough stretch of baseball right now. I'm not trying to let the Royals off the hook. I'm not trying to say that, you know, this isn't important. This stretch isn't important, because it absolutely is. You're playing playoff teams on the road. It's going to be extremely difficult, but there is some light at the end of the tunnel once they can get through this stretch. But you've got to try to salvage this road trip now as you head to Detroit.
I totally agree. I mean, it's not, there's no panic needed or anything. This is as much a product of the schedule as anything else. They're facing good pitching. If you're worried about the offense, they're facing good pitching almost every day right now because they're playing good teams. One other thing on the bullpen, and you said this, like, they haven't been in the situation where Ursig's been able to pitch in the week. That philosophically, that's always been my problem with that idea. Is your hamstring, I mean, could you imagine doing that with a starting pitcher, right? Like, I don't understand why you would ever allow anything to work where your best players don't play for that long a period of time. You can't do that.
I mean, don't you think that it's a similar situation to, you know, an NFL coach leaving a timeout in his pocket, you know, and not,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you've got it, like, use it, because it's not like you can save it for the next game. It's not like you can, like, it's a use it or lose it type situation in that particular setting. I know it's not exactly the same, but to me, it kind of strikes as that. Like, if you leave a guy on the bench and you're like, all right, we're going to keep you there and we'll use you when we need you, but he's your best pitcher out of the bullpen. Like, I get it. Like, I understand the criticisms of the bullpen usage, you know, especially last night. I will just say again, I'll just repeat it, that there were far worse options than going to John Schreiber in that bullpen. I don't hate that move. If you're going to die on that hill of Lucas Ursic is our eighth inning guy and we're not going to use him in any high leverage situation, yeah, I would say Schreiber or Lynch then are your next best options. And it just so happened that, you know, of course, they're Schreiber's facing Judge, and Judge takes some yards.
Right. Yeah, it's not this. None of this is a knock on Schreiber. Schreiber's been fine this year, and Schreiber may be end up being their sixth inning option if it's not Lynch. It's not against him. It's nothing against him. It's strictly that Urcic hasn't pitched in a week, and there have been two situations in the last two nights where he could have helped them win a game. Absolutely could have helped them win a game. Not maybe he can if they have a lead in the eighth. No. You had two situations where a guy who did this for you last year, right? This is what Urcic did when they brought him over last year. One of the big reasons they reached the postseason is Lucas Urcic, and they used him that way then. Where do we need him? Because, listen, like, it would have been real easy to just make him the closer and only the like, they could have done that last year, and they didn't do it. Why? Because they needed him in other places, and they have absolutely needed him in other places the last two nights. And the alternative is you lose games and he doesn't even get a chance to pitch. Your best pitcher, at least your best bullpen pitcher, doesn't even get a chance to help you win a game. Now, for almost a full week, that's not going to work. Not until Hunter Harvey comes back. Not until the offense picks it back up. If they get into a good stretch of baseball where they can make these six-inning games, great. I am on board with that all day long. That is not the situation this team faces right now. They have to do something different. They just got swept. And they're all close games, too. That's the other infuriating part about it. I was listening to the game here on KFH last night, and they're talking about it. Like, Jake Eisenberg on the call.
Yeah.
Like, how many of these games, these close games, can these two teams play? You mentioned MJ Melendez, Tommy. I actually think the confidence might be coming. He had the home run in the game in the middle of the series last night. That was a ball that a lot of times gets down and ties the game up for the Royals. I think he's at least getting a little more confident. We'll see if he can get on the kind of surge he was on last year after the dreadful start, which, by the way, lasted a long time last year. But they could use it. They could use it. We said this yesterday. I think they can work through one of Melendez and Renfro starting slow. I don't know if they can do both again. And right now it's both. And I think it's more likely that Melendez is a meaningful contributor to this offense long term than Renfro. So hopefully he does. But I think you feel very differently that he's not close to that right now.
Well, I just don't think that, even him hitting the ball hard, which he did in the ninth inning, and it was a great catch, don't get me wrong, and it could have been the game tying hit for Melendez. He's not finding, the production. He's not finding the spots. I mean, yeah, he had a home run two nights ago, but then he didn't do anything else in that game, and he was 0-for-4 in the game last night. That makes it really tough. I would also say, and you mentioned Melendez and Renfro, I think the one person who's probably probably doesn't mind that Renfro and Melendez are struggling is Michael Massey, because the attention's not on him. He has not had a good start to the season either, but everybody's focused on Melendez and Renfro for good reason. And Massey has really struggled also. And that's a key contributor offensively outside of the big four, outside of the top four of that lineup that, contributed at a, large clip last season. And he hasn't been able to get done so far this year through the first 17, 19 games of the season for Kansas City. So that's a big issue as well. It's not been consistent, the bottom half of the lineup at all. That was my biggest concern going into this season, more so than the rotation, more so than anything else. It was, what are they going to do from 5 to 9 in that lineup? And they just haven't been able to get it done.
Yeah, and Jonathan India deserves, he was off to a great start. He's not been nearly as good. I don't know why, but I'm going to keep watching Brady Singer for that, just because it's always been such an interesting trade. Brady Singer's been really good for the Reds, really good.
The only thing I'll say about India that gives me a little bit of more optimism, and that I'm not willing to throw a ton of criticism on him, is that even though India lately has not been hitting, he's been getting on base. I mean, his on-base percentage is pretty good. He's walking. That's his job, is to get on base. I don't care how you do it, as long as you're getting on base and you're setting the table for those guys. And he's still been able to do that. He's found ways to get on base, even if he's not currently hitting well. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, he needs to be. I mean, he needs to be hitting better too. But yes, he is salvaging it. But Brady Singer, Royals fans, if you're wondering and haven't been paying attention, has been very good in Cincinnati. Okay. Let's talk about Melvin Council Jr., the latest KU. He is the third addition through the transfer portal. They have four more spots to go. You sent this to me last night, and I don't know anything about Melvin Council Jr. Didn't watch any St. Bonaventure. Don't believe they made the tournament last year, which would be the time that you would normally see them play. It's been a good program over the year. Guy scored almost 15 points a game. 15 points, five rebounds, four assists. Like, you like all of that. What gets interesting to me, and right when you sent it to me and I start to look him up, he's not a shooter. Like, he does not shoot the three ball well at all, over 2 years in college now. So that's not going to be something which we know KU needs, right? We've learned this. KU needs some shooters. He's not going to be it. So then I'm like, and I text you this. I was like, okay, well, is he a point guard? Because I could see them using like a depth piece at point guard behind Aaron Peterson. If you don't want him bringing the ball up every single time, like, that makes sense. And he told me that he was off the ball guard. And I'm like, so they brought in a guard that can't shoot that isn't a point guard? And then you hear about his defense. And that's where it makes sense. Melvin Council Jr., I'm looking, like, he's not 24/7, which is where I usually go. Like, he's not even in the top 50 transfer prospects out there right now. So this is not like a headline move, but Bill Self compared him to Tyshawn Taylor and said he has a chance to be one of the elite defenders we've seen at KU in recent years. So look, I'm on board with that. I'm on board with big time defense, especially if they're going to rely so heavily on young players. Bring me a defender. I'm on board with it. We know Bill Self will find great defenders time on the floor. So I'll give it a B. Like, it's not an earth shattering move, but an elite defender that could become a rotation guy. Yeah, they're going to need that.
Yeah, I think it's an important move. I don't know if it's an earth shattering move, but I certainly think it's an important move. I think really, to me, it's more of the philosophy behind them bringing in Council than Council himself. If you look at the guys that Bill Self has brought in the last couple of years, you could really see a trend, right? Especially going into the last offseason, into last season. I mean, he went for the top shooters in the portal. That's who Bill Self went after. Like, you're talking Rylan Griffin, AJ Story. You're talking about these guys. Zeke Mayo was a prolific scorer. Like, he was looking at those guys to come in and be the assassins, if you will, offensively for the Jayhawks. And it didn't work. It kind of went away from the philosophy that, you know, of like, quote unquote, Bill Self guys, you know, that are those junkyard dogs and that are big time defenders and that, you know, aren't even necessarily flashy players. That's what Rylan Griffin and AJ Store specifically were. And it didn't work for the Jayhawks. And you knew going into last season, that's what Kansas was going to prioritize because they couldn't score two seasons ago. And they wanted to try to find some guys who could help them in that regard. So they sort of went away from the philosophy that's kind of been Jayhawk basketball for a long time. I think Melvin Council represents a return to that philosophy. You know, him being a really strong defender, him being able to get buckets at the rim and not necessarily a shooter. I like the fact that he's not a prolific three-point shooter. I like that. And there was an interview that was done with 24/7 Sports with him after he committed to Kansas. And he basically said that, you know, and this is his quote, "They see me as a point guard or combo guard, and whoever gets the ball can bring it up and go. They want to play fast, similar to when they had Frank Mason and Devontae Graham, and that's how Self is looking at the backcourt." That's Melvin Council's quote after he committed. So if you can have Council potentially be the Devontae Graham to Darren Peterson's Frank Mason, or vice versa, however you want to look at that, I think that's a great win for Kansas because, yeah, you're going to want the ball in the hands of Darren Peterson as much as possible, and he's probably going to be bringing the ball up the court a lot. But in times where he's not, if you can give it to Council and you can have Peterson be off ball and find him that way, man, I think that that's a great combination. So I'm in on that for sure, and I'm also in on what he can do defensively.
I think Jaden Dawson is a shooter. I don't know how many threes he took a game, but he shot a high percentage. The other guy, Trey White, that they brought in is not a shooter, but it has a lot of size. I'm going to guess he's also, as a 6'7" guard, going to give them an opportunity. I don't think they bring, I'm going to guess without knowing that he's a high level defender. Again, this happened while I was out of town. So I think the trend we may be seeing is athletic dudes that are willing to defend.
Absolutely.
Now, but, where's your offense going to come from? Darren Peterson can't score 40 points a game. If Flory Badunga is,
I mean, he can. Athlete, he can score 40 points a game.
Not in college, he can't.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you're not going to put that on his shoulders, but I.
It doesn't matter. Could. Like he, it's unfair to like even if he's Cooper Flagg, which is ridiculous and unfair. He's not. He's going to need a lot of help offensively, right? Like those that doesn't happen in college basketball, especially for freshmen. So the offense is going to have to come from somewhere. They still need offense, right? If Flory Badunga is a defense first guy, and I think he is, if two of the three guys you've brought in are defense first guys, and I think that they are, that El Marco and Jamari McDowell probably are prospects that at one point you thought will have, you know, would be scorers. When we'll see with those two guys. I'm very intrigued by those two guys. But Peterson right now is going to need, they're going to need something else offensively. And so, you know, you look at it now and then you go back and we look at where are the transfer. There are still players out there who are high level, you know, type players that are uncommitted. Darian Williams, we saw at Texas Tech. There are guys that fit a need, right? To provide a little offense. I just don't know what it's going to look like right now for KU as far as that load. And right now it's all on the shoulders of a true freshman. That makes me a little nervous. I'll admit.
Well, it's not now, all on the shoulders of a true freshman. I mean, you've got Flory Badunga that can be, you know, absolutely productive and take a big step forward offensively and, you know, defensively for that regard. To me, I think, you know, my priority is probably where I'm focused on a little bit different than yours. And I mentioned it before. It's a backup big. It's who can play when Flory gets into foul trouble. It's not if he gets into foul trouble. It's when he gets into foul trouble. That will happen. So who are you riding with in your front court when Flory Badunga can't be on the court or when he needs a breather or whatever that is? That's my big question mark. I don't have any concerns at all about a production issue from the backcourt. I mean, I think between Peterson and Dawson and McDowell and Jackson, you know, they just get counsel. Like Trey White, like I've got no issue with production in general offensively. For me, it's what are you going to do in the front court behind Flory Badunga? That's my big priority.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear you say that because offense, I think, has been the struggle for this team for 2 years now. But, you know, getting shots, getting offense. I think, look, Darian Williams is sitting there. I don't know why he's leaving Texas Tech, but he plays a position they need and does a lot of things offensively that they need. You know, there are players out there, and this freshman that they're bringing in this weekend, you know, a 6'7", 250-pound top prospect like that, he could also, but then again, it's a freshman. We'll see. I don't have like a hot take on how their offseason is going. I think it started with Flory Badunga, and in getting him back is, you know, makes it successful. For sure. Now I think they need to just be strategic, and that's been hard for them to do. That's why I think some of these players are interesting. But let's not pretend either. Like, you know, last year they went headline. You know, they've had the headline guys with Storr and Dickinson and Rylan Griffin that did, but they also 2 years ago went for the more mid-major level, you know, guys to come in, and that didn't really work either. Nick Timberlake, right? So It's got to be like a attitude thing this year. If it can't be so X's and O's, maybe it's attitude. And that's where I think a guy like Melvin Council Jr. you see and you're like, okay, there's a dog, right? He's got some of that dog in it. Like you can just tell like that mentality's there. And I think that's not a bad idea at all. I do think they need a little offense through the portal, though, still. And they've still got, what, four roster spots and tons of money, and they'll go find it. They'll go find one. They'll go find somebody. Maybe they get this other freshman to reclassify this weekend. But they've been making a lot of moves early in the portal. We'll see. K-State? Not so much. We'll get with Tim Fitzgerald next hour about that, as well as Joel Lamerno as the Wichita Thunder return for the first time in a while to the postseason. We'll have that as well. Your comments and calls, it's all coming in another hour of Sports Daily right after this.